He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And Jay is back with us this morning, public, and for which we are grateful. Yes, and we have several things to talk about, and I think I'll let Jay start off about his adventure to Europe because he did some Autobahn driving in one car, which he likes a lot.
And my dad used to.
That, we don't have that in this country, but it just he's been driving it for a long time. But let him go.
My dad used to let me clean the broiler.
Oh, he did.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to let Jay talk?
I'm going to let Jay talk,
okay.
Yes.
Wow.
I will jump in shortly, however.
I'm sure. He never did.
Yeah, I was in Europe for a few days, and unfortunately, I don't have a lot to report on new cars and any particular new car that we don't have here, except for the one car that I drove. It's like going to New York and back, a five-hour round trip into Germany. From Belgium, so half of driving in Belgium, half in Germany. They have speed limits in Belgium. They are trying to get rid of speed limits in Germany, but for now, limitless autobahns prevail to some extent, and they have a system that actually works best and that we should consider having here at whatever the speed limits are, is that they modulate the speed limits depending on traffic. So on I did the same route. I went to Bonn, and I spent about a little over an hour on the Autobahn on the way over. And I would say half of that time was with no speed limits. And on the way back, there were maybe only 5 or 10 miles of
limitless
sections of the Autobahn. They have lit speed limit signs over the Autobahn, and they just, you know, change the speed, and it goes from the black bar across the white sign that says go for it to limits of 130 Ks or 120 or even 100. And people actually obey those signs, and they obey them like it's pretty interesting. You see the difference in mentality. Drivers will race all the way up to the sign and then hit the brakes just like in racing and then get to the posted sign.
Just like here.
No, here we'll just kind of cruise, or we'll go 10 over or 15 over. No, they follow the speed limits. If it's
not
free.
Not if you're from Jersey.
Here's how they do it in the U.S. They don't have those practical signage signs. They have distance and time to exit 10 miles, 10 minutes, or 10 miles, 15 minutes. And you're supposed to try to figure out what the speed is you can go.
What's even worse is that people slow down to read the signs. It is so pathetic. And these are the same people that, you know, if you have a subtitled movie, are like, wait, for, because...
Well, there is a processing time in the brain when you have to do that, and you're right. But that's how we do it in America, to try to control the speed.
It's a little daft.
So I'll repeat myself, you know, every time I come back, I'm always surprised on how much more focused I need to be when driving over there. Traffic moves a lot faster. It moves faster because it's spread out better over the usually three interstate lanes. Interstate lanes. And people keep their right. They move over one to pass, and then they cut you right back when they've passed you.
It seems as though...
And it's nothing personal. There's a lot less emotion in the driving. In the week that I was there was only one guy who really got upset with something that I did that I didn't even think I... actually did. Everybody else just takes, you know, okay,
but
win one, you lose one.
The point is that driving is still considered to be a verb there, whereas here it's just being,
an active verb.
Yeah. Automated into, you're like, don't worry, it will drive itself. I mean, many things are set up to encourage...
focused driving in Europe.
Unfocused driving here. It's like, oh, yeah, it's here. Play your... Wait, can't you watch your video while you're driving?
Well, you're getting me to where I want to jump in, but let Jay finish because
I call it, active, not aggressive driving, active driving, spirited driving. You're focused. You're driving, usually a lot faster. Yes, did I have fun driving fast? Yes. what was, you know, on the limitless sections of the Autobahn, I was driving, you know, 160, 180 Ks, so, you know, 100, 110 miles an hour. And I'm, you know, amongst the faster drivers, but not the fastest. There's always somebody coming faster. And what's amazing is I was doing that with a three-cylinder, one-liter, turbocharged little Ford Focus wagon, which, and I actually thought of you, Jill, because it's a great little wagon that we don't have here, because, of course, we don't have wagons. We have, like, three wagons on the in the entire
crossovers we have here.
Yeah. Wagons
some
are done.
Which,
wagons
are
done.
Like wagons
are done.
Until they're not.
No, Volvos are wagons.
And so anyway, it was interesting. I thought about safety. They have a lot of signs alongside the highways that, you know, with safety tips. And one of them, and I'll jump right into the safety portion of the show, if I may. One of the signs read, "One less episode equals one more hour of sleep." And then they have a baseline. You know, it was in French that says, "Good night, good drive." Basically, we drive a lot better if we get the amount
of
sleep, if we're awake.
Properly,
if we're
not.
Yeah, properly rested.
Yeah.
And I experienced that a lot. I mean, sometimes by choice, you don't sleep as much as you should or could or would, and your driving ability does get somewhat impaired. So it's important, I think, to remember that being rested is a key factor of safe driving. And I have more safety tips, but I know Robin wants to go on with something else.
Well, I've lost what I initially was going to go on with.
What, distracted?
But let's go to, I can do a couple of car test drives because we'll get back to safety towards the end of the show. But let me jump to car test drives because I've had the benefit of test driving two what I've deemed to be wonderful cars. And Jay, as you know, on this show, we have said just pretty much all the cars that are being produced now are pretty well built. They last longer, they'll run longer, but there are definitely different driving characteristics. And I'll start out with the Subaru Forester. Subaru, as car lovers and knowledgeable people know, is a very successful vehicle company right now with their lines of vehicles. You have a Forester of how many years old? Five?
It's a 2014. Okay. And actually, five. Before you go, let me just say, yesterday I actually drove a couple hundred miles in the exact same car as mine, you know, a five-year-old Forester. Mine has 115,000 miles, and it's, you know, it's
like new.
Well, that's the point. It's not like new because I drove a 30,000-mile exact same Forester, same color, same year, and it does feel just slightly tighter. Not a lot, but just a little bit. So anyway.
My test drive was in a 2020 Forester Touring level, and these names that are on the back do actually have some meaning in terms of the sticker base price of that particular model versus a different model of the line, and also what the content of that level is. And this touring level of a Subaru Forester is really almost the top dog. I don't know whether there's one higher than that or not, but it's the Subaru Forester's grown bigger than the one Jay was talking about just seconds ago.
So what's it comparable to?
Well, I don't know what it's comparable to in terms of the.
No, it's the same. Line. It's a small SUV. It's like a Toyota. It's like a Jeep Cherokee.
RAV4.
It's like a CX-5. Right. I mean, Honda CRV.
But it has grown up, at least at the touring level. The quietness inside that vehicle, the solidity that it felt on the road, the comfort level of the suspension system versus Jay's age level Foresters is a big step upward. The refinement was extraordinary. It had a completely substantial level of content, so you didn't have to think about anything to add on to it. And I'm not sure there was much other than there was a thing on the window sticker, $61 for plate frames, for license plate frames, which I thought was a little interesting. I didn't even look at those frames. But other than that...
With the dealer's name on it?
No, well, I didn't look at it. But
so
Subaru, this was on the Subaru sticker. This was not a dealer additional markup.
I understand, but the plate can like... Remember when you and I went car shopping and I said, get everything off this car? I don't want it. Like,
yes.
You get
if you pay me to put your name on it, I will put
this
it.
This level came with WeatherTech branded interior liners for the front and rear seating. But what really interested me was, because I've been touting the Jeep cold weather package as being the state of the art in the terms of what they offer when they give you a cold weather package, which is heated seats and heated steering wheel plus heated mirrors and other things. The Subaru came with rear heated seats as well as front heated seats and heated steering wheel at this level. This is not on the base level you get this stuff. But I happen to have two passengers in the car, one in the front and one in the back. So it was noted that the rear seats were heated, whereas in the Jeep cold weather package, if you get the, there's a level you get, I can't remember what it is, where they put heat rear heated seats in it, but none of the base levels, which with the cold weather package, does anything more than the front.
Well, how base seats. Is the touring package? And
how base is it? The touring package is not a base level Subaru.
And presumably,
it's a top level. It had all the safety sense features. And that's what I wanted to get to, the self-driving Jay was talking about. I actually kept my hands off the wheel of this Subaru Forester from Hotchkiss School to the turn by the Sharon Reservoir because I didn't trust it going around that corner. But it bounced off the lines on its own, bouncing sideways, without my hands on the wheel all the way along that well-marked, well-line-marked straightaway and slight curvature between Hotchkiss and the Sharon Reservoir turn going into Sharon without my hands on the wheel, although they were ready. I did not sit there and read a book.
So on the Autobahn, is there a lot of...
I
was going to say, there's no way I'm...
You're going to do that in
letting the autopilot take the lead
Teslas
in the Autobahn.
On the Autobahn?
But that's a mentality that is precisely my point around this.
I saw a lot of Teslas. You see a lot of Teslas in Europe. I didn't see it, while I was driving. I didn't make any note of any. I saw a lot on Niva. You know, we were talking about the little Russian SUV that's been on the roads, like equivalent to a Jeep Cherokee, but based on a Fiat 124 platform from the 1960s. I saw one on the Autobahn that was fairly new.
Any Skodas?
I did not see the old Skodas, no. But the Lada was looked sharp, and it was probably not a very old car. Anyway, I took a picture of it. I had to put it together. Back to safety and you know, how much you pay attention. I guess it all boils down to, you know, pay attention when you're driving or you're just on the road, whether you're driving or not. I was reading through statistics of, you know, I always wonder how many over the weekend, and I'm backtracking again, I was looking at an article that was going over the 50 most important, the biggest causes of deaths in the country here. And you go down, you started from number 50 all the way to number one. And so car crashes are not, you know, they're mid-pack in the 20th, 30th place, which is, you know, still 40,000 deaths a year. So when you think about it, you know, every day 100 people or so are dying in car crashes in the country. It's a lot, and it's more than what it needs to be. Then I started looking at statistics, and I forget what the proportion of the number of pedestrians who get run over is, but it's a big number of people. And there are statistics, and you know, if you get hit at less than 25 miles an hour, you have 80%, and I'm not 100% sure of the numbers, but it's an order of magnitude, 80% of survival, of surviving the crash, whereas over 30 or 40 miles an hour, you only have like 10% chance of surviving. So who are the pedestrians who get run over? Well, a lot of people are getting run over in cities just because they're crossing the streets without watching. And, you know, basically blame yourself if you get run over.
Well, are they distracted by maybe looking at cell phones?
No, yes. There's 75% of people who get killed in crossing the streets are not crossing in marked
in crosswalks or
crosswalks.
Places where they should.
So there's a bunch of things you can do to
not get hit.
Not get hit.
But the most important is to, again,
pay attention.
Which is, and as a driver, the most important thing you can do to not hit people. Or
pay attention.
Pay attention. Yeah. And I just want to reemphasize that all of the brainwashing is you don't need to pay attention. Your car will pay attention for you.
All the sophisticated self-driverless stuff is aimed at not having you
That's
pay attention.
That's what I'm trying to say.
But here's the thing, and you know, I can go
exactly.
always with this. I pay more attention when I actually, you know, activating the self-driving features, you know, because maybe this is because it's new, maybe because I realize that I'm not fully in control, so I want to be there as a backup.
Yeah, but this is like, with all due respect, this is when Marshall talks to me about people on the internet. He started about 25 years ago as a monitor for AOL. So he absolutely knows how to comport himself, and he knows what the lines are in terms of responding in comments and whatnot. And the reason that I mentioned that is because many people don't. Many people are very happy to sit down and, you know, totally unfiltered, put something out, and that's that for them. For And so if you if it's because you have an affinity for the self-driving but you're going to oversee it, that's one thing. Well, most people aren't being taught that. Most people are like, here, don't worry, it'll happen for you.
I think that, you know,
Shazam.
The self-driving, what we see, you know, what's talked about is all the self-driving delivery vans. And there's a new company that just got an exception from the
Safety
National
Highway Transportation
yes,
Safety Association.
Yeah. Right. To allow them to conduct a number of tests. And they're going to put 5,000 driverless cars on the road to deliver, I don't know what, but so there's that, and there's the fact that the reality of all these driving aids, they're just that, they're driving aids. And again, I'll say it again and again and again, I think the greatest benefit at this point is just moving slowly through traffic. If you are in traffic, there is a benefit to having a driverless car.
Here's the question about these driverless delivery vans. Mm-hmm. How's the stuff going to get out of the van?
I've seen the pizza delivery Fords.
Yeah,
I guess you have to take it out yourself.
Come out to their house and pick their pizza. They open the door and the pizza, and they go reach and get it thing. But I don't know how, you know, you've got to be there. And I don't know whether the door opens automatically because it senses the recipient coming towards the vehicle as it stopped in front of their house or what. But that's, you know, I don't think we have to worry too much about that part of it other than your questioning, Jill. Because it's being done, and it'll either work or won't. But back to the self-driving thing, driver testing of the Subaru Forester, before I go on to the final one, so I leave Jay to close the show. The Subaru drove extraordinarily comfortably in relation to the older Subarus. It felt more grown up. There was certainly more isolation between the road and the vehicle interior in terms of wheel absorption of the strips between the pavement or the potholes or whatever than the older vehicles. Now this rode on 18-inch wheels, which of course is probably a step up from what you've got on your Subaru. So I think you're 17 or 16.
17.
But that goes to the point of these wheels were more comfortable, and indeed they are more comfortable in a Jeep Cherokee, which has 18-inch wheels on it. Two than the 17-inch wheels that I have on my two Cherokees.
Not sure about that.
Well, I can tell you because I've driven the different
models
and I can
feel it. How much is this Paragon? How much is the touring model?
It was 35 and change before delivery, I think, on the sticker. So 36,000, which is what, above or about at what the average price of cars are now, and you have to have money to do it.
Get ready for Robin's next rant. Go ahead.
Yes. And I looked at this was a leased vehicle, and I looked at what the lease included in the cost factor. And there are two areas which I would like every listener who wants to buy a new car to watch very carefully when they go into a dealer and look over their sales slip that is provided to them somewhere along the line of the purchase or leasing discussion. And they are extra add-ons that the dealers will sneak in. And in both cases, which I have two of for this show, if I get to the second one, neither person was told what they were ahead of slipping them into the agreement that the purchaser or lessee signed before they walked out of the dealer with
and
the car.
And about how much did it tot up to? Do you know?
Well, one was called Vinetch. VINETCH, which many people might or might not have any clue what it is, and it was $199 on the lessee of the Subaru Forester Touring, and then there was a dealer document fee, which on the lease agreement was clearly stated to be not going to the state of Connecticut, and it was not required, and it was optional, which meant if anybody read it, and this woman did not, was a negotiable figure, and it was $400, $399, which is equivalent to $400 on this lease agreement, and it was $600 on a purchase agreement on the next example I might or might not get to this show. And
That's
saw one on a Jeep sales agreement that was $499.
Yeah.
And
it's like a handling fee.
And it was printed.
It is.
And
it
was a handling fee, and for a document that is essentially pushed on a button on a computer and printed out by the computer. For which they were charging, or attempting to charge, a negotiable fee, but their fee was $4.99, $5.99, or $3.99.
Do you know how fan clubs made their money way back in the
day? Well, this is like buying insurance on a TV, too, okay? I don't want to talk about fan clubs.
No, it's relevant because it was the postage and handling. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's on a lot of things you buy, too.
And handling is a key word.
Handling fee.
And handling is a key word.
And I mention this simply because people don't focus on that just as they don't focus on
They don't, but the dealership should
then
be
Then came along
upfront.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah, now you just paid without knowing it.
You pay the fee, monthly fee or whatever, and you get free shipping, whether you buy or not, right?
It's free. It's all free. Listen, we've got 4 minutes
Except
left.
Except for the cost of free, okay? The other test drive was a CX-3 Mazda, which maybe I'll cover next week because it'll take me more than a couple of minutes. And Jay does want to continue with some things, I think, to close the show, I hope.
The auto industry is not doing well. It'll be interesting to see. You know, Robin will be going to the auto show in April.
15th of April. We have our tickets, the group that goes.
But Ford and GM have lost a ton of money in the last quarter. I think their yearly figures for 2019 kind of are hiding the fact that they're in difficult positions, but not just Ford and GM. Mazda and Subaru took big losses in the fourth quarter as well. We know car sales are stagnating or going down, and dealer inventories are climbing. And it's going to be a very rough road in 2020 for the whole industry.
Is it going to be
are
a buyer's market, though?
Are you differentiating between cars and SUVs, though? Or you just,
no, I'm just putting all auto manufacturers lumping
are,
the whole...
Are suffering with
I think there's less and less...
Sales.
I mean, in my mind, and I've said this before, there's less and less distinction between a car and an SUV anyway, and this artificial distinction.
I want to go to cars just for one second. Anything on Chicago, which is now, or which just was?
I haven't seen the Chicago show. I know some
is that the first or the second?
There.
Okay,
it's actually the first of 2020, I believe. And the New York Auto Show is the second, I believe, unless there's a small – there are other cities that have small ones. Like Hartford has an auto show somewhere along the way, and I've never been to the Hartford Auto Show, and I can't get excited. I think it's more of a dealer orchestrated event.
You should love it.
Than a manufacturer orchestrated event. but – I usually think you're going to take everything you want to see in something like a Chicago-level auto show or New York auto show, as opposed to seeing the local dealers' showings, which they take to the auto shows and try to get business.
One more thing about dealerships, I have to say, I was in, you know, when I was in Belgium, I thought of Robin in my hometown back there. It's a small town. There is a Ferrari dealership, but there are also brand new Audi, BMW, and Mini dealerships. The architectural design of these buildings is just incredible, and the way they display cars is absolutely
makes you want to go in and look.
It's just very impressive.
Hello, anybody?
No big yards with tons of inventory, because we know that in Europe you order your car and they make it and then they deliver it. There's very little inventory, even in large dealerships, which brings us back to this.
It's a difference between here, here, mind the speed limit, drive your car, or here, don't worry, your autopilot will pilot you to your destination.
Well, we'll talk more about the CX-3 next week. Remind me somebody in this room. And anything before Jill closes us out?
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.